You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
The federal government now is involved in this Sandusky case, and why they interviewed you, this is important to know, is that you have inside, direct, intimate knowledge of how the U.S. Postal Service was being used to mail back and forth this material. So now the federal government has spoken with you, haven't they, Greg?
Yes.
I don't know how much you can talk about, but they're looking into this use of the Postal Service by Sandusky and others to mail this material back and forth.
Well, I can't really get into it in great details because they don't want me going out and saying, I met with the FBI, or I talked to the Postal Service, or I talked to the Attorney General. I think they want me to be discreet about that. What I can say is I spoke to various law enforcement agencies at the federal, state, and local levels. Can't get into what I talked about, but pretty much it's rough about around what we're talking about now. And it gets into two parts. They were very interested. It was obviously a pedophile ring. But the two parts it was is who and how did they do it? Well, I knew the cops were always stopping and investigating these mobsters. These mobsters were part of a bigger ring. Pretty much all your five families in New York City and across the United States, one way or the other, either collaborate or they have their hands in some type of illegal porn, especially back in the 70s. I think the point of the investigation goes, for the most part, without getting into details, is what's the mob's involvement and how did they get involved in this? How did they know Savage? And then how did he, once this developed pornographic film of children and sexual positions or sexual acts, how did they get between point A and point B between Savage and these other pedophiles that were associated with Savage, Sandusky being one of them? And that's where I kind of fill in the blanks, because not only was I the victim here, but I'm also probably a juvenile offender in all this too, because I know this is going on and I'm taking them back and forth and I'm getting a little cut of the action by the mobsters for bringing Savage and all this pornographic business. And then Savage is paying me to make sure he doesn't get beat up and jumped while he's going into these red light districts where all these bikers and gang members and stuff was. I was making money on both ends of that, plus getting paid for the sexual deviant acts with these pedophiles. I'm this little street hustler. I'm not proud of myself, but I'm doing what I have to do to survive, and I'm making money.
Greg, did you get immunity before you started to talk to the feds?
They said that everything I did was juvenile stuff, and since it was not murder or anything like that, initially they weren't interested in any of this stuff because they couldn't criminally charge me. I was a juvenile, and that was 30-something years ago. Did they give me immunity? No. They just asked me a couple questions because I came to them. Was a little nervous. Well, could I lose my job? They said, look, you were a kid. You were misguided, and it was 30-something years ago. I doubt anything's going to happen. And that was the reply that I got from the FBI.
Okay.
Now, I want to add some credibility to what Greg's saying. In Time Magazine, on April 13th of 1992, Time Magazine, I remember, wrote a story about Ed Savitz. It was called Uncle Ed's Ugly Secret, where they delve into this pedophilia. Also, there's been news stories that broke that witnesses came forward that Sandusky was engaging in pedophile behavior and victimizing them all the way back to the late 70s, which verifies what Greg is saying. And after the Sandusky scandal broke last November, that's when you finally decided, I'm not going to keep quiet anymore. This had a big change in your life, didn't it?
Pretty much after I decided to get away from that life in these circles of mobsters and pedophiles, I went in the military, buried it, and moved on. But there's always this emotional post-trauma type things, because I was involved in horrible things with horrible people. And keep in mind, I was molested or sexually exploited between 250 and 300, somewhere in that range right there. And that's stuff you don't forget. And you did horrible things with horrible people and seen horrible things. So it traumatizes a young kid. And so that created behavior issues. So once I decided to become this victim's advocate and going out there and speaking to people in the 80s going into the 90s about take back your neighborhood from crime, because I felt guilty because I was caught up in all this. And I was the victim, but I was always a juvenile offender tied into it. I didn't molest anybody, but I didn't do anything to stop those kids, and I made money off it too. So I'm feeling redemption. And then I'm telling people, well, you know, fight back crime, do this, do that. If you're a victim, step forward, have the courage. And every time you would see a high-profile, national, media-worthy pedophile case, I would start going to extreme behavior issues, because now I got this new life, I'm married, I got kids, everything looks legitimate, no one knows about my juvenile past, but I know, and I'm going through this behavior things, and I want to tell because I want to do the right thing, because mine is a very nasty, dirty, trifling story, so I don't want people to go, ew, because, you know, you say the word, well, you know, I was caught up with these people, I'm doing that, and people are going to distance themselves, so they're going to see you as trouble, even though you're not trouble. It's kind of like dating a girl, and then you find out she was a prostitute. You're never going to look at her the same way, because you didn't know she was a prostitute, and someone brought it to your attention.
Right.
And I didn't want people to do that to me. So I buried it, but then it never stays buried and creates all kinds of negative behavior issues. So now fast forward to Sandusky, 2011, all shit hits the fan. When they're talking about Penn State, I didn't know because I was never brought to Penn State. I was never molested on Penn State. I didn't know Joe Paterno. And the name Sandusky really wasn't hitting home because it was a very tiny part of the bigger picture of my victimization. That was something that never happened. It was supposed to happen. It never happened. But then when they started mentioning Coach Second Mile, now that hit home. And now I'm starting to go through behavior issues a little bit. But here's the crazy part. It's not hitting me while I'm going through these behavior issues. But it brings up bad memories with my victimization. My first marriage failed. I'm with my second, soon-to-be married. I'm living with my fiancé with our daughter. And I don't want to be bothered with them anymore. I'm taking like 5 hours a day, paranoia, all these different symptoms. And then here comes the key part. Ed Rendell got out of office of being the governor in Pennsylvania, and he's on CNN and all these other news medias talking about how these kids were thrown on a bus and what a horrible life they're going to have. Now, this brings back to a flashpoint. I was involved in no pedophile stuff. 1976, how did I get introduced to my main pedophile offender? Ed Rendell. In 1980, I made police reports and I told Ed Rendell what was going on. And he said, oh, I'll take care of it. Never did. And now this guy's talking about how, oh, these horrible lives and who knew. And he's on the national news telling this. That was like the straw that broke the camel's back. Because that inner child that was innocent in my life that wanted justice, but the police at the time didn't want to hear it in 1980. I wanted my day in court, that inner child that was robbed of a childhood. So I'm going through all kinds of emotional things. I'm thinking about walking up and putting a bullet in Ed Rendell's head and then waiting for the police to arrest me. And in this way, I would be guaranteed a trial, and I would be able to bring back a ghost from the past and put that ghost on trial and everybody that was enablers of that ghost. So I'm thinking, man, and I'm looking in the mirror one day, and I'm like, this isn't who I am. I'm going through an emotional wreck. So I wind up going to an organization called Women Organize Against Rape in Philadelphia, a rape crisis unit, and then they kind of helped calm me down from all that and how to channel my energy. And then I said, I'm coming public. I can't stay silent anymore. I got to say what happened, who was involved, because I saw them dumping everything and making Joe Paterno to be this key master of a pedophile ring. And I'm thinking, that isn't the Joe Paterno that I heard of.
You said before that there were actual photo albums dedicated directly to Second Mile that Savitz had in his possession. Is that correct?
Yes, well, there was two sets of photos. There was the legitimate, what appeared to be legitimate photo op with some of the pictures involved me, Sandusky and Savage, and other kids just taking a photo op to promote Second Mile. But then there was the illegitimate ones and how they marked the illegitimate ones. He never wrote Second Mile on anything that was illegitimate, meaning Savage. What he used to put is TSM, the kid's first name and the last initial, and then it would either have a check, plus or minus. The minus means that they're not going to engage him. If it's a check, means they checked it, and the kid's in the beginning stages. If it's a check and a plus, means the kid's down with the program, and he's willing to prostitute to make money or get gifts or drugs or whatever to the other people. If it was just a check, means the kid was a one-shot deal. He's not really into that, and he's avoiding you after. It was like a one-night stand.
That makes sense, because when I attended the Sandusky trial, on the opening statement, they said that Sandusky had these lists with all the kids' names on Second Miles, and some of them had asterisks beside it. Well, they ended up finding out that the kids with the asterisks were all the kids that didn't have fathers in the home. So Sandusky was already making notes of who the kids that were easier prey were. So that makes perfect sense to me, Greg, that they had a system to identify who was and who wasn't, as you say, with the program. When I first interviewed you, you said that when you made the decision to reveal this information, you said it was harder than stepping in the ring with Mike Tyson. So listening to some of the stuff you described and the psychological impact it had on you, that this is the real face of pedophilia. This is what happens to kids, even as they grow into adults, that these problems aren't swept under the rug, that these kids keep having these problems. And what you're saying, it's powerful proof that these lecherous, rotten human beings that do this to kids, that they destroy their life for decades into the future. But I guess to close it, let the listeners know what this was like for you, that this isn't an easy thing to come forward with this type of information.
Pretty much from the day my victimization started to the day it stopped and I started living a legitimate life in secrecy, meaning that I buried all that other stuff, it creates all kinds of stuff. It creates not going to college, you can't focus, marital problems, a variety of marital problems. It caused my first marriage to end in divorce. You go through depression, maybe you don't work, you lose your job, and you don't pay bills, that messes up your credit. Brought up a good point, it would have been easier to fight Mike Tyson than to bring up this stuff. And there was two reasons I said that. One is when you go in the ring and fight Mike Tyson, well, you know it's going to be a quick knockout, meaning me being knocked out, and it's over and that's done with. the ramifications of coming forward with this and the filth and the detail fit that I have involving who, when, where, and I'm just now a police officer in the Philadelphia school system and a well-respected activist in Philadelphia, it goes back to that saying that even though it's going back to where you're about to get married and you find out 10 years ago they were a junkie prostitute, no one's going to look at you the same because no one knows you to be that person and somehow they find out. Well, it's a shockwave, and then your friends who are new friends now didn't know about it. Your wife didn't know about it. Your children don't know about it. Your own family members don't know about it. And then the ramifications, the post coming out and saying this. And I tell you what, I'm affected by it right now. Certain district attorneys and elected officials and police officials don't talk to me anymore because I came out and said all these horrible things that happened 30 years ago when I was a juvenile delinquent. They will not talk to me anything. I don't get invited to certain functions anymore. They don't return phone calls, emails, nothing. And me and some of my family members don't talk anymore because they said I should have kept that stuff hidden and that's something you don't go out and talk publicly. It was more like they don't ask, don't tell. And see, these are how pedophiles and the pedophile networks breed. They're hoping that people won't talk about it because that keeps their secret law society secret because the post ramifications of telling people, because quite frankly, some of my friends support me 100%, but a few other of my friends don't talk to me at all anymore. They don't even trust me around their kids. Now, that's the real hurt, priest. My brother doesn't trust me around my nephews, and I'm not a pedophile. I don't even have those urges. How I used to act out is in violence. That's why the mafia used me, because I was a violent kid and I had this rage based on my victimization. I was willing to use violence to express myself. And now my brother doesn't want my nephews next to me, which I was real close to, because they feel, well, you know what? He was a pedophile, you're a pedophile. Birds of a feather flock together. And it really created great hardship on me today for coming out and talking about it. You never get over it. That's why it would have been easy to get in the ring.
Considering all the people in the media, at Second Mile, at Penn State, politicians, people in law enforcement that knew about these pedophile activities and stayed silent for years and years and decades, that here's a man, Greg Buccheroni, of supreme courage to come out and talk about this stuff. And I hope, because Greg said he's come out in hopes that other kids will be able to come out and speak out about this stuff, but I hope Greg's an example for everybody out there that we have to bring this stuff out in the open once and for all now and end it. Put an end to this stuff. Put it on the table. Find out the people that did it. Arrest them. Convict them. Put them in jail. But we have to end this now. And Greg should be the example for everyone that this is what we need to do. So I just want to thank you for everything you've done, Greg, and turn this back over to Dave then.
Sure, thank you.
Greg, did you want to close it out?
Well, the only thing that I want to close out is that when victims come forward, don't treat them like they're lepers and don't re-victimize the victim. What happens when victims come forward, by their closest friends and family members, they're treated as lepers by coming forward because they didn't know about this and then they find out. It's kind of like I told you where you're married to a girl and then discover she used to have a criminal past and she was a prostitute. You never look at them the same, and that's how they look at a lot of these victims. So I'm just asking people, if the victims come forward, don't treat them like lepers and don't re-victimize the victim by treating them like they have some disease. Be more supportive to them.
Right. Greg Buccheroni, Victor Thorne, thanks for the time you both spent explaining all this to the listeners. Victor, you've done an awful lot of work on this matter, and I'm sure that the listeners appreciate what you've done. And Greg, thank you for being so honest and very eloquent in explaining all this. I know it takes a lot of courage to do this, but I think in the long run, it's going to help a lot of people, and I think that's why you're doing it, right?
Yes.
So thank you again, both Victor and Greg, for taking the time out.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks, Dave.